Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's your boy DJ Dramatic from the Senate DJs. You checking out my man right now, Bully the Kid. It's going down real heavy in the...
about what I thought was wrong and what I thought he needed to do
and things like that. We ended up having a show with Dave One shortly after that. I want to say it was the next day, where he addressed some of the things that were in the debate. Shout out to DJ Stewart, who was a judge at the time, who's no longer a judge. A lot of the names I'm talking about now, y'all don't know because, you know, a lot of you guys are newer to the bully community. Y'all are here 5 years, and everything in this community moves rapidly fast. So if you weren't here a year ago, you may not know who certain dogs are. You may not know who certain people are, and that's fine. But today's climate, to get away from the past, is a lot of conversations about the way things used to be, about people leaving, about people being disgruntled, about people using the ABKC for their own prosperous gains. You know, when we talk about things like that, we're talking about standards and judges. And, you know, basically the same thing we always talk about, corruption, conspiracy theories, things like that. And today I want this show to be about real questions for probably the best person that we could have answer those questions, and Dave Wilson. So when he contacted me and said, hey, you know, I'd love to do a show. We normally do once a year where you come on and you interview me and ask me tough questions. So that's what we're going to do. You know, Dave is from Virginia, so two up, two down, he's late. That's what they do in VA. Shout out to my cousins that live in Virginia. But anyway, that's what we kind of want to do. And some of the things I want to make sure I say before we even start the show is a lot of people get things confused. By no means do I agree with censorship or anything. I think that what we have in Facebook is a beautiful thing. Everybody has an opportunity to voice their opinion. Anything that brings back change, whether it's confrontation or conflict or drama, if it results in change, that's a positive thing. I do think there's a way to go about it. One of the things I hear all the time is, bully the kids, you remain positive. It's because, man, in my life, you know, being negative has never gotten me anywhere. You know, I'm very successful in what I've done, whether it be involving my education or raising my children or even with my dogs. I compete at a very high level, and I just try to keep negativity away from me. It allows me to focus on more positive things and grow. But today we're going to ask a lot of questions that are probably heated. A lot of you guys may agree or disagree with Dave or with myself, and that's fine. Go ahead and voice it. Voice it wherever you are. If you're in a chat room, if you're on Facebook, if you don't like it, you feel free to say it. But at the same time, make sure that, you know, you get the information that's being put out here, because I generally don't give you guys 90 minutes of my time anymore. I'd rather spend it with my kids or my dogs. But, you know, right now I enjoy radio and I'm happy to be back. And if I say so myself, I think my voice sounds lovely. So we're going to go ahead and jump into it real quick. I believe Dave is here. Mr. Wilson, are you in the booth?
Hello?
Yeah. Oh, there he is. See, Dave never comes on cool. It's always just hello, hello, like I'm hanging.
Nah.
What's
I thought
up,
it was
man?
Yes, sir. You just didn't push the right button.
Nah, trust me. You know, this is the thing. You already know that I'm not pushing any buttons. You know what I'm saying? I got Lauren in the back pushing all buttons. I'm not even allowed to move out of this two-foot space that I'm in right now for fear that we're going to lose all our callers, man. But how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. Tired. You know, of course, it's past my bedtime, but I'm good.
Yeah, you old. I see the hair loss coming, man. It's definitely getting up there.
That's not coming.
But, you know, one of the things I want to let everybody know, in all the years I've been doing these shows with you, I've never scripted a show. I know everybody thinks that because I'm so smooth and great with the words, but I never script anything.
Yeah, it's really because of the way I feel. That's how you sound so good, but we'll let you take the credit for it.
One of the things I wanted to do today, though, was this show was different than any other show I've ever done, and I wanted to have questions, more so that we don't waste a lot of time on one question and not get to all of the questions we have. So we have a lot of things that people say. Shout out to my man, Jose. He just said, dang, 8 years. It flies by real fast. He remembers the first show. Yeah, it really does. I got a lot more gray in my hair. I'm way more handsome now, more debonair. So, you know, time does go by very quickly. So thank you. thank you for that love. But, Dave, you know, real quick, I want to jump in real fast because a lot of what we hear now is about the good old days. And I want to start there because I have a different opinion about the way things were a decade ago compared to now. You real quick, man, just sum it up real quick. Do you think things have changed so much in the last decade when it comes to these dogs and the breeders and the place that we use as our venue, which is the ABKC? Do you think things have changed that much in the last decade?
I mean, there's been a lot of change. You can't deny that. It's a different world. The world itself has changed, you know. So, it's been a lot of change. I mean, the thing about it is the old days where people look back and they say, oh, but things are better. There was a time when something was being built. There wasn't the platform. There wasn't all the things that we have available to us that we have today. So it was a lot different. It was a lot smaller world back then. Everybody knew each other back then. And like I said, everybody had to work together to try to form something. So it appeared to have more unity, but it was just because we had to band tighter in those times to try to create something that didn't exist for what we were looking for. Mm-hmm. And it was a small world. So, yeah, it's a lot different now. I mean, there's still a lot of the same elements, but
were the
overall,
dogs better?
And everything changes, you know.
Better? Yeah, were the dogs better 10 years ago as opposed to now?
I think that the difference is there's a lot more dogs now. So it was easier to highlight certain dogs that stood out back then. So I think, there's a lot more dogs, and there's a changing time where there was a separation of lines in the beginning, where now it's a blend of lines. So it's a kind of a new world in that aspect. But I wouldn't say the dogs are better. No, I mean, I think there's just a lot more dogs nowadays.
All right. Well, and I'm gonna jump in on that because it's something that, and I want you to criticize me if I'm wrong, if you disagree. I've always said that the dogs have not changed, that the dogs are better, but for a different reason. I believe that education overall in our community is higher, especially about dog anatomy and overall dog structure. When I came into the ABKC back in 2007, one of the first shows I went to was the Nationals, not 2008, I'm sorry. When I went to Nationals, and it was in L.A., and I got to see King Kamali win, and I was a nobody in the bully community. I was a fresh-faced newbie straight from the UKC, where I was showing American Pit Bull Terriers at a high level. I had what I would say, above-average understanding of conformation and overall canine structure. When I came to the bully world, I found that most people were not familiar with structure, even some of the judges that we had at the time. And if we really look at it, we've had over a 50% turnover of our judges in the ABK since that time, and I think the education overall about canine structure has improved. And here's my reasoning why, before everybody gets mad and tomorrow I'm on Facebook and everybody's blasting Bully the Kid because he said everybody was idiots back then. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is back then when I would say angulation, nobody knew what I was talking about. When I would talk about layback to the shoulder, nobody knew what I was talking about. When I was talking about converging or the side gate or movement, it was a foreign concept to the majority of people in the bully community. Now, fast forward a decade, now those people have got the opportunity to learn within the ABKC show ring, and now they're more knowledgeable about faults, even though most of them still refer to them as flaws. they know what faults are now. So now they're more concerned with dogs being easty-westy. They're more concerned with dogs being hockey. They're more concerned with high rears and sway backs, where when I first came in, that wasn't really a concern as much as it was, man, that's a badass dog. Were there dogs that were conformationally correct? Yeah, Nemesis was a beautiful dog. King Kamali was a beautiful dog. A lot of these dogs weren't perfect. Hef, I love Hef. Shout out to Bo. But Hef did have some faults.
A lot of these dogs have things that we forgot about. A lot of these dogs have weak rears. And there's a whole lot of situations with the dogs in the past that if you were to see them on video now, you'd have a different perspective than what you had back then or what you're seeing on a picture nowadays. If you actually saw the dogs today that we, reveled over, like the past dogs, a lot of them, you would have a way different perspective you saw them today. And I don't want to call any one of the dogs out or say anything bad about them, but it's just I've gone back like, oh, you know what? Our views have changed a lot because back then we didn't put as much emphasis on a lot of these things as we do today. So a lot more things flew past than they do now. And just so you understand something too, the world you're referring to, in the very, very beginning, a few people did come from the show world, but the mass amount of people in the very beginning were people that hadn't had that background and hadn't had that environment yet. So it's not like, it's not necessarily a bad thing to say that nowadays people know a lot more than they do back then. It's just, it was a new world at that time where this world has come up inside the ABK show world. So this world has come up more knowledgeable to all of these things because they've been through the show and they were born and bred into the show environment where that group of people back in those days, a lot of people hadn't had that environment yet, so they hadn't learned that. So they were, just a different way of looking. They just didn't have that show history that we have now.
All right. So I'm going to ask you this really, really quick. When we sit there and we say that a lot of those people that came back from that time, when we're talking even before Bully the Kid, pre-BTK times, 2004 to 2008, before I arrived, and they left, why do you think that is? Why do you think some of the people that were around at the beginning left? The ones that you, even the ones that you respect or like, or the ones you left. But why do you think that happens?
Dog breeds and breeders, there's always a high turnover. I mean, it's nothing out of the ordinary in any breed, and this is a high turnover breed for a lot of reasons. People get into it for a lot of different reasons, and life changes, you know. Some people, they only liked one element of it. You know, they weren't wanting to go to where we are today, to shows and things like that. They were in a situation where they just wanted to get out and show off, you know, and you know, maybe that's not what they wanted. Maybe they didn't want to grow into the show world. Maybe their life changed. I don't know. There's just so many different reasons why people stepped out of it. Like I said, it's a high turnover anyway in a dog game. I mean, that's just what it is. You
right.
don't see the same faces. It's a rarity that you see a face that's in it for longevity. You know, it's very rare. You don't see a lot of, even today when people say, well, he's an OG or this, you know, been in, I'm looking like, well, they've only been in it like 6, 7 years or 8 years or something. To me, that's still, you know, like no time, you know.
But, yeah, but I'm proud to carry my OG banner because I've been calling OG. So, like, I appreciate, even though I still feel relatively new, I understand why we hear that. Some of the things that we see now is with the registries. When I got involved in the bully community, it was primarily the ABKC. I came after the Larry Durans and all of that stuff. I showed up afterwards. Then we, of course, had the I can't remember the names now, but Jennifer Nadaz. I'll say their name. You don't have to say anybody's name, but I will because I can't remember the name of their thing. And then we had the UBKC, and we've had all these other registries come since that time that have came in and tried to get a little piece of the pie of the American bully. In that last decade, I'm going to let my listeners know what we have experienced. We've experienced the American bully being accepted globally as a breed that is readily recognizable by airlines, by you know, almost anybody.
Airlines,
not dogs,
necessarily good
airlines. That's not a good thing, but it's definitely something that I looked at.
It was sometimes better when you flew under the radar, but anyway.
But now you're on the radar, so we have that. And then
yeah.
The UKC recognizing the American bully all within the last decade. These are humongous things. I think the American bully went from walking through an airport and people saying, oh, my God, that's the biggest pit bull I've ever seen in my life, to now being recognized as an American bully. It is something that I've noticed because I travel a lot and I hear it. So the breed has come a long way. But when we sit there and we think about all the negativity surrounding the breed today, a lot of it is coming around from what the ABKC allows and condones. It is about mixing. It is about cheating. Do you feel like, honestly, like this is any different than what we've always heard, or is it different now? And if so, why?
Yes and no. I mean, before that was, there's things that the outside of our community would say, you know, about our breed, and now a lot of it is internal, and I think that's the main difference is where the voice is coming from. But no, I mean, there's always going to be things like that. I've heard all these crazy rumors all these years, and it's actually just becoming redundant after, you know, all these years. But, Nah, I don't think that is different. I think that it just, if you catch in the beginning, a lot of people criticized our breed and criticized our community, you know, and then, you know, we did a lot to earn our respect, and then somewhere along the way, the community turned back on itself and started criticizing itself and criticizing the dogs and criticizing everything. So it's not much different. It's just, I think it's the where it's coming from that's the big difference, you know.
Okay. Now you brought up the dogs, and let me ask you this because a lot of people ask this question all the time. The standard is written now. The ABKC has a standard. People go there, I believe, for the American Bully standard. They go to the ABKC site when they want to know what an American Bully is. That being said, should the standard ever change, and if the dog is still evolving, then the standard should come when the look is established. That's what a lot of people argue. I disagree with that viewpoint, but I want to get your idea about a standard changing in the American Bully or any breed, but we'll start with the breed, of course, that you're the most familiar with, which is the American Bully. Do you think the standard should change?
Well, I think when you're it's an interesting question, because if you're talking about an established breed that's complete and mm-hmm. finished, then no, it shouldn't change, because once you have a complete and you have a finished breed and this is what the standard is and people start breeding for many years and generations for that, then it shouldn't change, because that was completed. You know, so when you take on the standard of a completed breed or something like that, then no. But when you're developing a breed, like we were, and like you're familiar with the Shorty Bull, when you're developing a breed, it's a different scenario, because when you're developing a breed, you have to start out a little broader than the finished product, because you have to get all these things within your stud books, within your gene pool. You're going to need to pull from a lot of different things. When you're developing a breed, you need a very, very, very broad gene pool, and you need a vast gene pool. You need enough in that gene pool to sustain that breed for generations, to permanently sustain the breed, you know, because if you don't, what happens is your dogs become too tightly bred and you run into all kinds of problems that you can't get rid of, and then you start to run into all kinds of genetic disorders and everything. So you have to have an extremely broad gene pool to build a breed. Not an established breed is different. They had a broad gene pool at some point in time when they built their breed, you know, so ours has to be. So when you're starting out, your standard has to be a lot broader than when the breed is coming to completion or completed, because you're trying to bring everything in, and you're trying to bring in the different attributes and everything that you're trying to do, and make sure that you have enough diversity and everything within your gene pool. So once a breed has been around for a while and you've gotten it that way and you finally got it, you want to start to tighten your standard, basically start to restricting things and make the standard tighter and tighter until you get to what you feel is your final destination of what the breed is and what it should be. It shouldn't change as far as the core elements of it. It should change as far as the definitions and you know, like the adding more faults and things, you know, that to make it a better, stronger, healthier breed, things like that. So it doesn't necessarily change. It should just get tighter. And that's a big misconception in our breed. People, I hear it all the time. They change in the breed. They change the standard. We had the same standard from 2004 all the way up to 2015 or 15, when we revised it and decided to make it tighter and remove some elements that, you there?
No, I am. Go ahead.
I didn't know what that was. But anyway, I mean, that's the way I feel about a standard. So it shouldn't change. It should only become tighter and stricter over time with a developing, not an established breed.
Right, and I'm going to say this, because a lot of people, it doesn't tick me off when they say this, because I tell people all the time, I love dogs in general. So when people say things to me about standards, it's a very weird thing, because I study other breeds outside of bully breeds. Standards change all the time, people. Even in breeds you consider established, because human nature is to breed things so tightly that things become a problem that were not a problem in 1935, okay? So the American Pit Bull Terrier, for instance, some of you guys will be familiar with that breed. I would hope most of you are. That breed is over 100 years old. That standard has been revised as late as less than 10 years ago, 8 years ago, I believe. I don't want to quote a date and be wrong. But that
maybe it was in my time frame, with the UK, it changed twice, you know.
Which twice in the UK?
But I agree with what you're saying as far as a standard needing to change when there becomes problems within a breed and it becomes too tight. That's a different scenario. The UKC scenario, in my opinion, was nothing to do with health or anything. It was preference, you know. And that change, I don't agree with, you know.
Why did it change? I want you to say on the air, why do you
think? You want to know why it changed? Because with the UKC, yeah. I don't know how they work nowadays. Back then, they did not regulate their own breed. Everything was outsourced to the National American Pit Bull Terrier Association, which is a panel of people that are UKC participants. That are breeders of that particular breed, and that particular panel pretty much dictates everything that happens for the breed. When they make changes and alterations, standards and things like that, is strictly to them, not up to the UKC. That panel of people changed quite a few times, from board members and presidents and things like that, and when they did make changes and people changed, then sometimes the standards changed with the group of people that were on the panel. So,
correct. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to add this. To the people that are there, and we have some people, I don't need to name their names or drop names, I think the American Pit Bull Terrier standard, and the club he's speaking about is the breed club for the American Pit Bull Terrier. They changed it, in my opinion, because of the American Bully. Okay?
I disagree that because that was changed in – when I was there, it was changed during a time frame when there wasn't – the American Bully wasn't a concept.
Right. But I'll say when I came in 2008, and we were leaning towards
that's a different generation from my time. So
yeah, that's a different generation.
We're thinking two different changes.
Yeah, we're thinking of two different changes. The change after 2007 occurred when they removed the amount of bone that was allowed. They didn't want dogs that were heavily boned, you know, to the point that it was mentioned in the standard. It was faulted in the ring, and you got a more terrier-looking dog. Gone were the days of Pam Carter, ABKC judge. Y'all may not know this, but Pam had a very successful American Pit Bull Terrier bloodline called Gaff, which is also influential in the American Bully in parts. Those dogs were heavier bone. They were great-looking American Pit Bull Terriers with a heavy American Staffordshire Terrier influence. At the time, Amstaffs were not the Amstaffs we see today. They were big
Amstaffs
dogs.
There was an era when Amstaffs were big dogs, big, heavy bone dogs.
They were 80-pound dogs.
That's where I got my mass from. They were.
And for those that don't know, when I showed in UKC in 2002 and 2003, I showed a dog, a grand champion dog, that weighed 86 pounds, you know, and was 20 inches tall. With
Cairo's
with
father
time,
was in the 90s, just so you know,
yeah.
Pure Amstaff, you know.
Yeah. So that's a bigger dog. So they changed it. That being said about standards, it's to me, I am more open to standards changes that are going to benefit a breed and help it progress. Regardless of what we say, and I'll go back to say when the American Bully was first orchestrated and I was not in the room, I'm one of the few people that will stand up and say, I did not write the standard.
But just so you know, the standard in my generation when it changed, like the head was the biggest thing. The head was the highest pointed feature on the dog, and that was taught to judges and their pointing system and everything. And that was major features that they changed during my generation. Your generation, they decided to take away bone. So it's, you know, little by little they turned that particular pit bull into a terrier completely.
It went completely. The change you're speaking about is when the American Pit Bull Terrier, I apologize, was known as a head breed. That's what it was. It was a head breed.
And it was a bull and terrier mix. So even though it's been classed for many years in the terrier class, it actually really wasn't a true terrier, you know, just to clarify that, because some people think it is, and that's not true.
And now that's a perfect segue into the question of the American Bully, because I know a lot of people listening are like, we don't care about the American Pit Bull Terrier, even though it is an ABKC group. Let me say this. The American Bully, most would say, eliminated terrier traits. And now we're at the point, and I want your opinion on this, that some would say that the American Bully needs no terrier traits. It should only have bulldog traits. It should only be a bull, basically a bulldog breed, not a bull and terrier breed. Is that why you think the dogs we see now that people look at as confirmationally not as correct are faulted because people think they should just be
a bulldog? It's a mix of things.
Terrier in the American Bully?
Well, it is a big mix of things. Number one is breeders like myself who are breeding American Pit Bull Terriers, we were always breeding bullier-style dogs. I mean, that was our thing. Even if you read some of the old ads we had, like putting the bull back in terrier or, you know, it was just all these things. Like, we were all trying to put a heavier mass on a dog, you know. So we were always breeding a lot away from a lot of the terrier traits, you know. So now when you're looking at the American Bully, you have generations and generations and generations of breeding away from terrier traits, breeding to really more, I wouldn't say bulldog, but the bull side, the mastiff bull side, you know, because when you're talking about bull and terrier, there's no real, like, this particular terrier that made this breed, you know. Let's use the terminology bull, you know, or bully, right? They're going more and more that direction. We've been going more and more that direction for many years. That's what we separated ourselves. Once we were forced this way, and then we took another step, we did separate ourselves. That's why if you see generations of Razor's Edge, American Bully wasn't Cairo and those dogs. It was later on generations, Roe, Rizzy, you know, dogs like that, you know, that were the American Bully. So when you're looking at these dogs, they are a bullier style dog, and they have been. So they're going to have characteristics that are less terrier than the American Pit Bull Terrier. They're not going to move the same as an American Pit Bull Terrier. There's many things that are going to be different because of the style of body they have and, you know, everything else about the dog. And even that's how it's written in our standards. So I think a lot of people still see and interpret things through the eyes of an American Pit Bull Terrier and towards the terrier view of things. In actuality, that's not really true because this breed has progressed and it isn't that same breed as the American Pit Bull Terrier anymore. And there's a lot of things about it that are going to be different from terrier-type dogs, you know?
Right. And can I interject this? And once again, I'm going to ask your opinion because this is me and what I'm saying. I believe that the reason dogs like Little Roe was a perfect example. When I saw Little Roe, he was a bully dog to me. Once again, everybody remember, I was coming from the American Pit Bull Terrier. At the time, 2006 to 2010, the American Bully was constantly compared to the American Pit Bull Terrier. The American Bully was way more bully than the American Pit Bull Terrier. The reason a lot of people now say, oh, the dogs aren't as bully, is because now the American Bully is compared to American bullies. Okay? So they're not being compared to a terrier dog. They are being compared to each other. So when you say that dog's not that bully, not that he's not bully, it's that he's not as bully as another American bully. That's one of the things that when I listen to people talk, they never look at that. They never say that the reason Little Roe was considered a bully was because, one, his head, his bone was way more, without using my English degree, more bully than an American Pit Bull Terrier. Now, if you were to walk him next to Omen, no, it's a different thing. So
if you step back to that generation we're referring to, Little Roe, like the hot dogs during that time, for what we were pushing us, that was really the beginning of the American Bully generation, you know. And on my end, I was pushing Little Roe. On the Gotti side, they were pushing Goliath, you know. And these are the, you know, I mean, I tell people over and over again, Razor's Edge and Gotti are the two. We're not talking Gray Line. We're not talking, you know, a lot of people. We're talking Razor's Edge and Gotti were the actual two founding lines of the American Bull because we were the two breeders that went that direction. You know, you hear all kinds of things like this, but the two breeders that said, I'm taking my bloodline and I'm going this direction, were me and Richard. Other people did step in later and some other things, but we were the two people that said, let's push our lines, you know. Backing with me was the entire Elite Edge, and that was, you know, a huge powerhouse. And we can, anytime anybody wants to talk about that, I can, because that was really one of the Elite Edge was really the powerhouse that pushed that name and all these things that we've done. But the two lines were Razor's Edge and Gotti. If you go back to that generation, you look at Little Roe, and you're looking at, I think, Goliath would have been that time frame, you know. And these are the type of dogs that were, you know, founding. A lot of times, not to change the subject, but real quick, a lot of times I see people all the time talking about, oh, but this wasn't what Dave had, or this wasn't Dave had. A lot of people don't understand, like, I was building a bloodline, you know. The era of Knuckles and those dogs were dogs that I just got to start a bloodline. We were showing those dogs, but I just got all those dogs to start a bloodline. I just got them in my line for features, you know. The generation of Cairo was still an American Pit Bull Terrier. He was being shown and titled in UKC. That was a generation later from the Knuckle generation, and you see the change in the look and the substance and everything they had. Next generation, you're looking Little Rose and Rizzies and that style of dog, and those were the things that ended up morphing to what we call the American Bully of today, and that's when we put the name in the standard. So there's a lot of misconception in the public, and they're like, oh, this, you know, how did, you know, this is what the ideal representation was supposed to be, and how did this, no, those things were different things, you know. This was foundation dog, these American Pit Bull Terriers, then this is the American Bully, you know. So there's a lot of misinformation out there. I also see a lot of misinformation where people show a game dog and a skinny-looking staff, and like, how did this turn into this and this? I'm looking at, like, well, I don't know how that turned into that because I never used a game dog or that little skinny staff, you know. So.
Wow, and that brings me right into some of the questions that we had. And this is something that we hear a lot about you personally. It is, and let me finish the whole thing so I can
go ahead. Let's go. I'm sorry, man.
It says this. They say, how can Dave Wilson, Razor's Edge Man, now incorporate Dax in anything that he does when he doesn't like that style of dog? My argument when I do discuss this, and I love discussing dogs with anyone, is this. I feel that Razor's Edge, before I knew you, when I looked at your program and I looked at the dogs, you have a history of incorporating dogs that weren't necessarily show dogs. okay? When I go through and even looking at the old Clover Hill stuff, and a lot of you guys, you guys are going to jump on Bullypedia to see some of this. Those dogs were out of standard for the AKC ring or the UKC ring. There were dogs that were beautiful, like Knuckles, that won everywhere he went. But there were some dogs that were tools that you use, even dogs like Buckshot and things like
that. Knuckles was a tool, to be honest with you, just so you understand. That was not even that was one of the foundation type dogs I used, but not that wasn't my ideal dog, you know?
That wasn't your ideal dog, correct?
No.
I wanna ask you now, when as a breeder, this is not as Dave the president of the ABKC, because a lot of people I think do want to know Dave the breeder. More so even than what they want to know about you as the president and making all these changes, and we will get to ABKC questions for everybody that's asking those. When it comes to using dogs to create dogs, what is your stance when it comes to, I will not use this style of dog, I will not use that kind, and the dogs you do use? Is it something that you do look at faults and virtues, or what is the mind frame for you when you say, hey, I'm going to do this? Because a lot of people feel right now that the ABKC and yourself don't want people using certain dogs. So why is that, that you don't want them using certain dogs? And why is it that you do use dogs that may not be
they
grand
talking
camp?
To me? Or you gotta...
Yeah, I'm talking to you as Dave Wilson, not really as a president, just as a breeder. When you look at a dog like a Dax and say, hey, I'll use this dog, as opposed to a Miyagi who, you know, for you know, we know was banned from the registry, and now we do have some ancestors in the pedigree. Where do you draw the line into what you will use and what you won't use in a breeding program?
Well, you're talking to me personally.
Talking to you, Dave Wilson, Razor's Edge. Dave.
All right, there you go. Got to clarify that one. I mean, well,
this is not ABKC president Dave Wilson.
Yeah, yeah, but you went from past to present, so you mentioned all the old things, and then you came back to the president stuff, so.
Hey, it's been a year since I've been on the radio.
Yeah, you're like Dr. Rust off a little bit. I mean, if we're talking in the past and we're talking now, I mean, I'm always the same. I'm always, when I was a breeder, I was always a guy looking for attributes that I wanted to bring to the table. I try to steer away from certain faults a lot of times because a lot of faults are very hard to wash out in a lot of ways, but I was always looking to bring in certain attributes to what I had. I would always work with something foundation stable that I thought I liked. This is where I'm going to base everything off of, and mine was really a certain structure, but I was always looking to bring in the other pieces because it's a different game then when you didn't have the complete product that we have today. You didn't have the draw that we have today. So I was an attribute breeder. I was always looking to bring in something, and it's a difficult because you got to look to add something, but then when you're adding that, you're also adding a bunch of other things, and to try to isolate that one thing, maintain have it's tricky. But if you line something strong, and that's your foundation, it's a little bit easier to bring something in because you have such a strong base. If that makes sense, you know. So
what?
I was always looking for attributes. A lot of times my hardest thing was mass. Mass and head. I could get a great body, great everything, but mass and head were the things that were hard to continue to try to maintain. So a lot of times I would overshoot on purpose because I learned over the years, if you put two things together a lot of times, exactly what you want to what you have, you're not going to get exactly what you want if what you had was a little bit less because it waters it down. So a lot of times you have to overshoot a little bit, you know. So being that head and mass were two things that I was looking for to bring into my line, to be the look of my line, sometimes I would overshoot. I would use something a little more massive than what I was wanting to achieve in the end, you know, because I would overcompensate in hopes that would lock in that trade a little bit stronger. Same with head and things like that, you know. In an instance of when I used Paddington to Paco, a lot of people thought I was crazy, you know, because Paco was a big, sloppy dog. But I thought, you know, no, I saw what I had. Paddington was a tight bred dog. She had everything I wanted. I just wanted to add a little more mass to her, and it worked perfectly, you know. Later on in life, Shamu, another instance. I used that dog, Thug. A lot of people said the same thing to me about Thug. He's a big, sloppy, funky-looking dog. You know, and I was like, you know, this has worked for me before. I know exactly what I have in Shamu. Added Thug, boom, produced dogs like Hallie and I can't remember her brother's name right now, the whitehead male. But, you know, like there was, you know, a lot of really nice dogs that worked by overshooting, overstepping the boundaries on certain things to try to bring. And in this case, we're referring to mass, you know. That's all those situations were. So a lot of times I go beyond. I don't always match up a perfect quality dog to a perfect quality dog, because a lot of times if you're trying to add something, you might not get it that way, especially if one is lacking, you know, what you have is lacking. So you overshoot sometimes. So a lot of times when I was breeding, I went for something a little bit beyond the trait that I was looking for. In modern day, it's a lot different because we have a lot more dogs to work with, you know. It's a completely different game. I think it's very easy now. I hate to say it, but I think it's extremely easy to create something nowadays because it's there, you know. And then, you know, the whole thing you bring up with, like, Dax and these things is that, you know, I never personally chose to use Dax. Dax was a dog that I think Dax, you know, was really hot as far as, like, on the show scene and going around in seven years ago or more, you know. He's not as – I mean, he was an interesting dog. I mean, it you know, made a name for himself with that dog, you know, and he did. But that dog wasn't as exaggerated and things as – some of the pictures seem and some of the things, you know, I mean, he, you know, he was there for something. But anyway, for me, I never chose to use him. He was used in the camp one time that you know, I was part of, but it wasn't my first choice of a dog, you know. And I never, in that breeding, there was nothing that I thought was really interesting, although I've seen him produce with other people and done other things. But, you know, people got to understand something. It's a different world nowadays. Like, when I was really a breeder, it was a separation. It was Razor's Edge and Gotti, and it was a big separation, and we all didn't always get along, and we didn't agree with each other. A lot of the people on the Edge side felt the Gotti stuff was not conformationally correct and had a different look to it, and, you know, it was that look that you see today. I mean, if you really step back and you look at a lot of those dogs beyond Gotti, like when they mixed Gotti to Moo Moo and all those generations after that and all those dogs, it was a completely different look than Razor's Edge. The thing about modern-day dogs is no matter whether you liked Edge or whether you like Gotti, but it's a blended breed now. It's gone so far now to where these lines have come together and blended together that it has a third appearance now, which is the dominant appearance of the breed, is that blended look of the dogs. So Dax is in a lot of things now. It's part of the American Bully, and it's just what it is. That's whether you like it or not, Dax is part of the American Bully. His history, his lineage has always been here since the very beginning. The look that he has been here. Go back and look at the dogs. The neck that people like in Dax, go back and look at the dogs behind them. Go back and look at all those dogs back in those days, beyond G2 and those other dogs and Goliath and things. You know, these are traits that those dogs had. Us Edge people didn't like everything about those dogs, and vice versa. They didn't like everything about the Edge dogs. But the bottom line is the generations beyond, the original Edge guys and the original Gotti guys blended all together, you know? And that is they were all of American Bullies. So they were just two separate lines, and they morph together through the hands of other people in future generations, you know?
All right. Real quick, let me add a little footnote for you guys out there that are listening. When he says Paco and Paddington, and Paco being a little sloppy, he is talking about Paco the Amstaff. He's not talking about Marco Suarez. It's Paco.
No, I'm talking about Huatuca Spirit. His name was Paco. They called him Paco, not Marco Suarez. It's Paco. He's a tightly bred little road dog that actually got smaller. I'm talking about Huatuca Spirit, which was an Amstaff, Sharon Stone's dog, Clover Hill Kennels. His name was Paco.
There we
but
go.
On paper,
we have to make sure
Huatuca
we clarify
Spirit.
A lot of people. You know, we'll get a bunch of calls.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. There's people that don't really. Huatuca Spirit, that's the dog I'm referring to, a.k.a. Paco, right. Generations before Suarez Paco.
Real quick, yes or no answer. Do you think Gotti, right now, looking at the modern-day dogs that they have, the American Boogie, is more of a Gotti-influenced dog than a Razor's Edge dog?
Well, it's hard to say because the Gotti of my generation were big dogs, big dogs. We're not talking short dogs, big dogs, you know. The Razor's Edge dogs of that generation were a lot shorter, tighter dogs. What you're seeing today, they have a definite lot of Gotti influence, but you can definitely see that there's a lot of Edge in there, too. That's cut it down. That's chunked up and, you know, done better things with the rear. That's, you know. So I think it's a blended look in a lot of different ways now.
Right. Now, we've been over this question a million times when it comes to Miyagi and some of the dogs that are going on and things like that. I want to say this straight up. The Miyagi question, which I feel like we've beaten time and time again, when we look at the dogs that are coming down, there are dogs that now compete in the ABKC. Was that an executive decision that you made, or was it a decision made because of the amount of dogs that it was affecting and the amount of people it was affecting that wanted to compete? Like, when you did that, I personally think you did it the right way. I like the fact that there was a situation where we had judges looking over dogs to see if they fit the American bully type. A lot of people argue with me all the time that, well, bully, when you say that, that means that you're allowing mixing.
But let me just back up and clarify that, just so y'all understand.
Okay.
There is no registry as strict as us on the American bully. None, period. I don't care what anybody says. You, Casey, no. Those dogs that are considered exotics today still carry UKC American Pit Bull Terriers. Paperwork, period. That's the truth. Check it out. Go do it. All the other new registries that have come around, you check their criteria. Most of them are not requiring pictures. Most of them, every one of them is accepting every one of those bloodlines. And I promise you, you can check pedigrees and I can show you because I see different pedigrees all the time. So we are the strictest registry for the American bully, period. There is no registry that's going to have a criteria as strict as ours that tries to protect the breed as much as we do, regardless of what maybe a judge from this registry would say or somebody from this registry. The truth is in the actual registrations. We are the actual registry. We're the original registry. We're the ones that created the name. We're the ones that set the standards, set the criteria. We did it all. We are the strictest, okay? If you're going back into dogs like Miyagi was not. There's so many misconceptions. Was not denied because somebody said he was a mixed-bred dog. Miyagi was only denied at the time because he refused to do a DNA challenge because people felt they were getting semen from other dogs, not him, because they were starting to get things that didn't look like that original Miyagi. You know, Miyagi of today, I have my own opinion, and I don't even think it's the same thing that was going on anymore. But it was very, very few dogs under very tight restriction. The judges did a lot of inspections, DNA challenges, a bunch of things that went with it. It weren't just like just opening the floodgate and letting anything in, you know. They were quality dogs with a lot of people who bought into some things early on, and, you know, it wasn't their own fault, and it wasn't at a question of the dog. It was a question of the ethics of the breeder and things that happened that the breeder wouldn't stand up for, you know.
Now, that being said, throughout the history of the American bully, there's been dogs that have been questioned in regards to their heritage, in regards to purity, in regards to being controversial, and things like that. We can go back to Bismarcky, we can go to Dax, we can go to Miyagi, we can go to Bullseye, French Montana. But it brings us to today's modern dog that I think has the most controversy behind him. And I don't often hear the controversy being that he's mixed as much as this dog does not represent the American bully. It also brings us to probably the most dynamic character that we've had in a long time, because where most people used to shy away from the attention or you could never hear them, this individual we hear all the time, and that's Bashar. A lot of the questions that I got through my messenger has centered around Mr. Bean and Bashar. This is a dog I've seen. This is a gentleman I met. We're not friends. I don't know him. We've probably spoken three words to each other the entire time I've seen him. Why do you think that dog in particular and that individual is such a lightning bolt for controversy? And do you feel as a person, not even as the president of the ABKC, just as a person, that you should distance yourself from someone like that when there's so much negativity surrounding him and so much dissension from his program?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. First of all, I think there's a misconception that people think, like, I'm tightly affiliated or I have business or partnership or any kind of vested interest in any way, and that's so far from the truth. I mean, me and Bashar have never had any bad words. He's always got along with me, but he's not, you know, somebody that was a close friend where you see him coming over my house all the time or anything like that. I mean, it's not somebody that I have any business deals with or anything like that. He is somebody that breeds American bullies, and he goes to shows and he competes and he does a lot of things. He's very active in the community, you know, so his personality is very flamboyant. I think a lot of times when you have somebody that has a way, it draws a lot of attention, good and bad, you know, and depending on how you represent yourself, you're going to have people that don't like you for certain things and people that do. And those aren't concerns. Personality things aren't really concerns for a registry. I mean, that's if somebody has a personal issue with somebody or they don't like their personality or they feel they brag or they're arrogant or whatever things people feel about somebody, those don't really have anything to do with a registry or a breed or anything like that, you know? So I mean, in this guy's situation, you got a guy that sold a dog for probably more than any dog in this breed has ever sold for. So that brings a lot of attention, good and bad, mm-hmm. you know. And it's all in how it's portrayed, you know. Something like that could be huge because it could be something that really brings value to a breed, and it could bring a lot of positive attention to a breed. And if you see the situation where the dog went, there was a lot of good for it, you know. But yeah. there's also a lot of bad. It just all depends on how who's viewing it and how they're interpreting it. As far as, you know, the, I don't know, like distancing yourself, I mean, it's not that I'm even really close with anything, so that's kind of irrelevant. I mean, anybody that's at events and goes to shows and talks to me, I talk back to them too. You know, I answer emails, I talk to people, I take pictures with people at shows, so I'm mm-hmm. not, there's
so
nothing that's...
Playing, huh? Playing Demon Boy and things like that.
Well, I mean, here's a situation with a dog like Demon. Let's talk about Demon for a minute. I mean, do people forget that the Blueberry, the mother, was mine? Like, you know, I mean, that was something that came from me, you know? And then I worked a deal with Sean, who's an old friend of mine, and I got the first litter out of her. We did the breeding, and then the second litter wasn't actually mine. That was a litter that was done between them two, you know? And I got in the mix of the dog because I wanted a male at the time, and I hadn't gotten a male from a couple other things, and... So Demon Boy, I ended up getting Demon Boy, who is my dog, which later on I brought William in, and now he's co-owned by me and William. Nobody else owns the dog.
Right.
I mean, he was born and bred right there at Sean's Yard VA Powerhouse. So it's like there's a lot of people that throw things on Demon that aren't necessarily true. It's like Demon is a dog because I wanted another male because I wanted something that I could represent, you know, I'm Razor's Edge, but I'm also ABKC. And then the American Bully is now a breed that's beyond just Razor's Edge, and there's a lot of blending. I like the fact that Demon Boy had a lot of Razor's Edge in him, and I thought that he had really good attributes for certain things. And what I was at the time, really, in all honesty, was a lot of people were spending money on these exotic dogs, and they were buying these dogs for these exaggerated features. I know they like the arched neck and the big neck, and there's certain things about those dogs that they bring, but without all the bad traits, you know. And I saw this breeding as an opportunity to say, hey, you know what? Those exaggerated features that are in some of these dogs you're spending, you can have those exaggerated features in our breed. That's where a lot of these things came from, but on good, strong dogs. If you get a good, well-built American Bully, you can have those exaggerations but still be put together, you know? And I wanted that. If you look at Brothers, Brother Heavy D's, like, dude, that's a beautiful litter for that type of a look. It's not a Razor's Edge dog. It's not a anybody dog. I mean, it's an American Bully. You know, and I wanted it for that purpose. I wanted it for the purpose of being able to show people, look, you can have all these lines put together that make the American Bully and all the features, but still a well-built, solid, good, functional dog, you know, and that's what Demon Boy was. And to be honest with you, it got to the point where people were misconstruing it for all these other reasons that I felt it was a better move to work a deal with William and have William own him and have him promoted over there so that it wasn't so much Dave Wilson's name on it. Dave Wilson, because I guess when you know, my name in this is carries a lot of weight in a lot of ways. So to avoid that, I said, you know what, then just let the dog be the dog that he should be and let the dog shine for what he should be and not be so heavily attached to me. And that's what made me make that decision later on to where now he is, you know, co-owned by me and William. But nobody else co-owns that dog, just me and William, you know.
Perfect.
And to be honest with you, you know, mm-hmm. out of respect for people who are involved in it, if you know me, I do a lot of deals with people, and I've done a lot of things for people. So out of respect, I always tell people, if you want to use the dogs, if you help me do this or you did this, your dog's a father. Mm-hmm. You help, you know, you raise a litter. If you want to use a dog, fine, because for me it's not always a money thing. It's not always a business thing. I like to see the continuation of things. I like to see the improvement of things. So I'm always trying to help people. And people know there's a lot of people that have worked for me personally know that I'll do things. So, you know, just because somebody owned a file or something doesn't mean that it's their dog. I mean, that dog is my dog and me and William own that dog.
All right. Now, I'm a person that has a very high stud fee on one of my dogs. That's Ghost stud fee is $5,500. I don't mind putting it out there on the air. I'm very selective about who he's bred to, but for a shorty bull, he has this high stud fee. We're hearing that Demon Boy stud fee is $10,000 as of 3 weeks ago. Real quick, just to clarify for all the people that were interested in Demon Boy, is his stud fee $10,000? And if it is, do you think it's worth that amount of money, considering the amount of puppies he's had? They're not very old yet. Do you think he's worth that as far as the stud fee?
Demon Boy... Look, let me tell you something about dogs. All dogs have good and bad in them. Every single dog is all in how you breed the dog. If you weigh the odds of a dog like Demon Boy and you start to see his productions, what you're starting to see is even though he's bred to a lot of different females, the majority of the dogs he's producing are carrying the features of him. So he's reproducing in a way that he's throwing more of the positive traits or the more desired traits than the less desired traits in a dog. So I think that type of a dog, when you have a stud that does that, it is of value because you have a better chance of reproducing the traits that you're looking for from that dog. Demon Boy stud fee's been 4,000 is what his stud fee's been this whole time, you know. And they are young. I mean, you're starting to see things now coming up on a year. So it's, you know, we're still new watching what Demon Boy produces.
All right. Now, speaking out about dogs like, you know, Demon Boy is a dog I've seen personally. I personally like Demon Boy. I think his attitude is bar none. I got to see him in Holland, and I was impressed. But when we look at the dogs that come in the ring now, competition being so high, there are allegations of steroid use now because dogs are bigger than they look. There's allegations of bribery. There's allegations of people sending wrong semen. I really want you to speak about your feelings about these type of allegations. I also want you to speak into what would happen or what the process is to have this rectified by the registry. Do you look at that as a registry problem, or is it just an allegation? Obviously, if someone's sending the wrong semen, that is a registry problem because it affects.
That's a simple fix. I mean, if you're breeding to a dog, breed to a dog with DNA profile, period. Fit.
Okay.
You don't play the victim in a situation. Make sure you do the right thing from the very beginning. If you're going to breed a dog, if you're going to spend money, this is what I've been telling people for years. This is the biggest thing, like the old Miyagi thing. If you're spending a lot of money to breed to a dog, then do two things. Get a contract that states your guarantees of what it is that you're supposed to be getting from the breeding, one puppy, two puppies, if it doesn't take, how many times you're going to get to do it. You know, get all of those things in writing so you have it. And request that a dog is DNA profiled, because once you own offspring of a dog or breeding the dog, you can then challenge DNA, so you have a way to prove if your dog is out of that dog or the semen's from that dog or whatever the case may be. So request these things. Don't turn around like people turn around like, oh, like this person doing this person. No, step up. You should be the person that says, hey, before I spend this money with you, I want this contract so it shows what I'm getting out of this guarantee, and I want this to be DNA profiled so if I have any questions or anything comes up down the line, I can prove that this is what it is, you know? And that's it. It's really a consumer thing. They need to step back and say that. Now, us as a registry, of course, if you own an offspring or you paid for this and it's a DNA challenge and the person doesn't comply with the challenge, they get banned. Or, their papers get pulled, things like that, just like any other registry. But a lot of things here that people say nowadays that you hear over Facebook and all these things are allegations. And until, you know, this is a real company, so until you can actually provide some kind of concrete proof or something that shows this is really what happened, you can't just make somebody assume somebody is guilty just because on hearsay, you know. If a judge or somebody did something wrong and we can prove it and we know it, we will remove that judge. Of course we would. There's situations where judges have been removed from the past. We're just not as vocal about everything because some things we feel don't need to be that way. But, yes, of course, if there is something that is being done fraudulent and we can prove it and it's gone through the right channels, of course actions will be taken, 100%, you know.
Yeah, and I want people to understand, some of the people that are listening, and new listeners, old listeners, everything. I want to – eventually I'll have Bashar in an interview, and I'll ask him a lot of Bashar questions. It's very difficult to ask another man about another man's business or what he believes. And I, from the little bit I know of Bashar, I don't think he'll have a problem coming on and answering any of the questions, because he doesn't seem like the type of person that shies away from who he is and the way he wants to personify himself. So that's some of the things for all about everybody that's asking me about that. That's kind of how it goes. Shout out to Ruckus 30, who has a lot of questions as well. When I sit here and I think about everything that's going on and the many hats you have to wear over the years, I have a different opinion of Dave Wilson than probably 90% of the people out there, because I feel like I've seen the evolution of you from a breeder and EE person to the president. I want a lot of people to understand that for a long time, the ABKC was not ran by Dave Wilson. It was located in California. It was not in Virginia. It was very far away from your hands. During that time, there were things that happened that, of course, I think pushed you into a position of having to do something else to progress the company. in that, there's been a lot of times when things are happen, you take the brunt of it. Sometimes deservingly, sometimes undeservingly. One of the biggest things that's happened in 2016 involved standards. One of the standards that happened was the OD standard, and a lot of OD people were confused around, I believe, I want to say, first time I heard about it was in January and then around March, about the changing of the verbiage in the OD standard, and then now that verbiage, when I spoke to you the other day, that it went back to the way it was originally. Can you give our OD community any type of clarification of what's going on with the OD standard? Should they still feel confident in showing ODs in the ABKC because they feel like they're trusting this registry as their home, but they feel like they're being disrespected in regards to the standard?
But, you know, the OD is another breed that if you go to different registries, it's different in a lot of different places. It's one of those breeds that is made up of different breeds, and it in my opinion, the OD was still also a developing breed, kind of similar to the American Bully and kind of similar to the Shorty Bull, you know. And you go different places, the OD has some different looks to it, and the standards are different with some of the different Bulldog registries. There's variances in their standards from one to the other. We, in the beginning, were introduced the OD by, I don't remember the club, but there was a club that introduced it to us, and we went by their original standard. Later on, that club, I don't even remember where they were from, to be honest with you, but we started to get a lot of oldies in from other people, you know, and we started to see that one club, we couldn't really reflect what that one club was because theirs was a little more biased than what the broad, you know, the breed was. So we decided to go with what the average was for the breed, you know, what most of the registries all agreed on, you know. And that's what we ended up.
IOEBA.
Yeah, right. And that's what we ended up basing our standard off of, and we left it that way. There was some verbiage that was changed on the height minimum. I think this year, a lot of people understand that they want to blame somebody, or they think it was for this reason or that reason. And the bottom line was that we did a update on our website, and when we did that, everything, we got old judges appeared back up, old standards. You know, something happened that reverted it to back to normal time. It's fixed. It's done. It was brought to our attention, a lot of hype came around it, fixed, it's back the way it was, period. And I think that was only, the only thing that was out of that was I think the minimum hype was either lower than it is now or it had some verbiage that said it wouldn't be penalized or something for under or something, but it's fixed, it's back to where it was.
So as of right now, there is a height requirement?
There's a height maximum, height minimum.
A lot of people saying that this hasn't changed yet on the website.
Everything will change on the website. You'll get all the updates. That'll be updated in the next week or so.
Last question about the OD is Merle. We're hearing a lot of rumors that Merle is going to be allowed in the OD. A lot of OD people are upset. Some OD people are not upset. But a lot of them are saying Merle is something they don't want in their breed. When you have a large amount of people saying, hey, we don't want that, and they're coming to the registry saying we don't want it, at what point does the registry say, hey, you know what, we're going to give you what you want and not do this, or is it a executive decision, again, to just say, hey, the hell with it, we're allowing
Merle? Put it to you like this. In the American Bully, the Merle is considered a DQ. I, David Wilson, don't agree with it. I've never agreed with it. I was outvoted. You know, so there's a lot of people think, hey, I'm the only say, or I'm the only person, you know, that does it, and that's 100% not true. I was outvoted on my own thing in my own breed, you know. So I think that it does have a lot to do with what the clubs and groups and breeders feel for that breed. At the moment, there really isn't one for the oldies, which there need to be. The oldie breeders do need to come together, especially the ones within the ABKC, and form a club and work on some things so that real issues like that can be addressed. It's hard to say when you have just people emailing here, there, and there, and what's what. You know, I mean, you actually need clubs that form, that are active clubs in the ABKC, that are active show people, that are active breeders, and those clubs need to come together and have a meeting with the ABKC and discuss these things, not just an individual here or an individual there, you know. So I don't think at this particular moment there isn't a club, and there needs to be, and that's what needs to happen. You need to form, the OD breeders need to form a club, and they need to come together as the breeders, even the ones that have, you know, maybe differences, if they're all here for the same purposes to continue this breed and progress with this breed within the ABKC, they need to form a club. And that club then needs to come down and meet with ABKC and say, look, this is the club that we're forming, this is what we feel, and let's discuss it and see where those type of things go. In the American Bully, again, it's a DQ, and I don't agree with it. So, I mean, I am not the sole vote in everything that goes down, you know?
All right. With that being said, could we, on the website, real quick, real briefly, do you think that change will be up before February 1st?
Yeah, it'll be up this month. It has to all be up by the end of January. Everything that we're supposed to be doing is supposed to be done by the end of January, including the new drudges training programs and everything we've been working on.
Okay, good. So, I definitely think a lot of people are saying, how would you determine the breeders that come together? I think what you're trying to say is it's not a determination for you to do. It's for the breeders to approach the ABKC and say, hey, we've come together to do this. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it's a
Yeah, you need
situation.
To form a breed club and then come to the ABKC and then, you know.
Now, there's a lot of conspiracy.
But if you don't do it that way, then what happens is then you just get the opinion of certain people and it becomes biased.
Yeah, right. I agree. I think that when we only have certain opinions that get drawn in, that does happen. When we sit here and we look at everything that's happened over the time, there are a lot of conspiracy theories that become truths. You know, like I know, the longer you get away from something, the better. I think if I disappear in the next 10 years, there probably will be a statue put up of me at the ABKC office because my legend will be that grand of all.
Oh, we already got it. It's there. You just haven't been there to see it.
Yeah, don't say that.
It's out back. I have to show you where it is, but next time you come, we'll go out there.
The next time I go there. But now that we look at it and we look at people that are starting this, and I have to ask you this because a lot of people say there's a hypocrisy when it comes to the ABKC, when it comes to you in particular, that you have done something that you don't want anyone else to do. You started a registry. You created a breed. You've made decisions. You've stepped out. When other people feel that they do these things, whether it be start a registry, whether it's try to start a bloodline, that you put your foot down on their throat and say, that's not going to happen. That's not what it is. You can't support those people. Do you feel that it's a dictatorship of hypocrisy, or how do you deal when people talk about that conspiracy theory and yourself?
Well, that's there's all kinds of conspiracy theories. That's why they call it conspiracy theories. You know, they're just based on conspiracy. But anyway, that type of thing, I mean, look at it like this. I don't control what anybody does in this world, okay? And if you go to this show, you go to that show, that's your prerogative. That's not my prerogative. If you're asking me how I feel when another registry comes up for this particular breed, you know, I think this breed has had such a misconception over the years and has always been a lot of gray in this breed. And every time somebody else pops up, they're spreading that thinner and it's becoming more and more gray because they're not following the criteria or doing exactly the same as the host registry who created this breed and created everything for it. So what happens then is you're starting to get more misconceptions, more variances, more things, and I don't support that. I can't support the other registries that are doing it beyond what we feel is correct because I think that is actually hurting our breed. So it's not that I'm going to be a dictator and put my foot down and tell you this, but if you're asking if I'm going to support it, no, because I think it does more harm than good. It's different if it was something that worked in hand with us and did everything exactly the same way and accepted our pedigrees to do their pedigrees. And that's a different scenario. But in these cases, it's everybody with their own opinion, you know, and the more of these different opinions you have, the more it's going to tarnish the breed because it's just going to get more and more and more confusing, you know. And I don't agree with that. So, I mean, if you work for Coca-Cola and something, you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to go out there and start, you know, going to Pepsi and all these other things and you know, promoting those things either because it's outside of the brand that you're working. And to be honest with you, I won't do it for that reason. The other reason is because I think it adds confusion. I don't agree. Like, we were talking a minute ago. I said we are the strictest registry for this breed. It's the truth. And we are. So I'm not going to support something that's even less strict than we are or doesn't follow the same criteria as we do because I think that's doing more harm. So I don't think it's a dictatorship. I don't tell you what shows to go to. I don't tell you what, you know, whoever to talk to. I don't do any of those things. It's just me and our judges. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
You know, our judges can judge any breed for any registry, with the exception of the American Bully, because we certify them to judge the American Bully through our standards, our training, you know, in our way. And then if they're out there doing that for another American Bully breed and they're not the same as us, I don't think that gives the right perception. you know, to people out there, because then they're like, oh, well, over here it's this and over here it's this. So I don't support those things because I think it adds more confusion to the breed. You know, other
now,
breeds I don't care because they're already finished complete breeds and everybody's most likely following the host club standards, you know.
Right. Now, this is something I have to talk about because it's something very close to me when it comes to the Shorty Bull. The Shorty Bull is a breed that I've adopted as my own since 2009. I pretty much jumped in and said, hey, I want to be a part of that. Now, the Shorty Bull is different than all the other breeds we're discussing outside of the American Bully, and even the American Bully is different because there are two definite creators of the breed. In regards to a breed club, in regards to that breed, I'm one of the people that always follows the creator's lead. I'm also, without a doubt, before everybody jumps down my throat, I am at a benefit because I get to talk to one of the creators regularly. So I have, I'm not going to say insider information, but I directly go to the source when there's an issue. The ABKC right now is the biggest show venue for the Shorty Bull. As a recipient of the number one award and beautiful trophies that I received, over 100 of them decorate my home. I'm sorry, I'm bragging. But when the Shorty Bull comes up, there's a unique situation that happened towards the end of the year, and it revolved around the standard changing. Now, it's a foregone conclusion now that we all know that nothing happened in the standard. Nothing was changed. But it was not changes weren't discussed, but the breed was discussed. And at that point in the ABKC circle, basically, there was a consensus that there wasn't enough information about this breed and you wanted more. There's a lot of stories going around. My main question about this is twofold. One, will the creators of the breed be consulted? And two, are you still going to make a trip out to Kansas and see some Shorty Bulls? I think you're at a disadvantage, and a lot of people are, because they don't see a lot of Shorty Bulls. No matter how much we talk about them in the show ring, there's a very small number of them that anyone ever gets to see. I doubt that there's the judges themselves have seen more than 100 in most cases, because it's just not that large of a breed that comes out. So will the creators be consulted, and will you make a trip out, because we know that you're trying to get to the motherland of Shorty Bulls in Kansas. Are you still on for that trip?
Yeah, I'm still on for that trip. I would love to learn more about that breed, period. You know? So, yeah. I mean, like you said, It's a unique breed because of the two creators, and we're in a unique situation because we were introduced it by one, and then later on we were introduced to the other breeder, and those two breeders had a big divide, and the worlds between them had a big divide, and it put us in the middle of a divide, and it put us in the middle of two standards and two different views. So we've been kind of in the middle all these years, and, you know, I mean, that whole little thing that popped up that you were talking about, I mean, that was really because we were doing a practice run on a judges training seminar, practice run, you know, bringing in some new applicants and doing things, and the Shorty Bull was a breed that we were finding a little bit difficult to get fine-tuned training and drawings on because where our standard sets between two different views, and it left, in our feeling, a lot of areas of gray that we would have preferred been tighter and easier to train. So at that point, I did mention it, and that's really where it all came from, but it really wasn't changing anything. We were just saying we need, you know, we want a clear definition before we can really train, build our new training system and do our drawings and all the things that we have for the training system for all the different breeds, because that's our biggest thing this year was education on all breeds, you know, and better training on all breeds. So, yes, I will be going out there. Scheduling-wise, it's quite difficult, but I got to find some time and get out there in the next month or so. So, yes, I'm going to go out to Kansas. It's Kansas, right?
Yeah. And when you get out to Kansas, I'm making everybody go, so there probably will be about 3,000 Shorty Bulls there.
Well, then I will have to spend a few days there. But, yes, I would love to go out there and see the foundation, where they're from, and get some more learning and knowledge on it, and hopefully come to something in the end where we have a better training program for our judges on that breed. You know, that's my goal, is just so that our judges are completely trained on that breed without any areas or questions, you know.
All right. Now, I know we went on a lot of different things, and with these shows, I'm used to people afterwards saying, you didn't ask this question, or you didn't go hard, or you didn't do this, or you went too soft, or you did great. Normally I hear you did great, but it is different. Really, I want to ask you more just you as a person right now. Are you happy with what's been created? Are you happy with the people and the breed and the dogs where they are, or do you still think there's a long way for you to go? And this is just an honest question. It's not for you, you know, to give like a political.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, because you got to stand up. Is that you're always going to have, I mean, it's a developing breed. It's a growing breed. And it's a breed that was created, like I said, from two different bloodlines. So it's in two completely different looks. So you're always going to have some differences. You're always going to have people on one side of the fence and on the other side of the fence. So it's always going to be that way. I mean, it's disheartening to see our own community tearing each other down. But if you take a step back, like I do a lot of stepping back, and I do a lot of traveling, and I see things on a broad scale, not just what you see on Facebook in front of your face and these little cooler things. I think big picture. I see what's coming through and how it's changing, and it's amazing. And, yeah, I'm happy because I don't think people realize the scale of how big the American Bully and ABKC are these days. And I think I don't get me wrong, Bully, because I understand when people have issues and they want to get them out and they don't agree with something, and that, like I've said before, I don't always agree with it's done, because I think there's a proper way to do it. Clubs are a great way to do things. But, you know, and I do that, but I think that I'm completely happy because I see the broad picture of it, you know, and I see really what it's doing and what it's doing globally, not just in America. I mean, in America, it's amazing. We're already amazing. I mean, we do almost 4 shows a weekend. You know, people say the turnout's changed. When I think the problem is that there's just so many things going on now that people just can't, you're not going to get as a large mass at one time because there's so many options now, you know. But, I mean, it's huge. It's up to believe. I mean, you go to a show and you're still getting over 100 dogs of one breed in there, you know, in one class.
Right.
And you're talking a weekend that there's 4 shows maybe, you know, so it's unreal. So, yeah, I'm happy. I do want to say a couple of things. I want people to understand something. Just because you're looking at pictures on the internet of dogs, you can't judge a dog from a dog show. You can't judge a dog from that. You got to go there and see. And things change different times. Man, you might go to a show one day and that dog looked really good that day. His condition was up. His energy levels were up. His weight was right. He was handled well. The dog displayed himself well. He might have run. You might see that dog at another show. He's overfed. He's broke down. He's wore out, you know. And those two situations are not the same dog because there's a different time for these things. So you might go to look at a picture and see a dog that's in a horrible position. You know, think, how could that dog have possibly won? But you realize that might just be a really bad picture, you know. Or you might watch something and see, well, this dog wasn't doing this or this, but maybe the dog wasn't even being judged at the time. You know, there was another dog. So many variables that you cannot sit on a computer and Facebook and judge dogs. You need to get out there, see the dogs, and be there firsthand to really understand. Just because a dog doesn't look great on the internet or the dog looks great on the internet doesn't mean that's what the dog really looks like, and it doesn't mean that the next time you see that dog, it's the same thing. I've got dogs that have had too fat times. I've had dogs that were underweight at times, you know? So it's like you just can't go anything. You got to go out there and see these things for yourself. And I think our world sometimes is lazy. We sit on a computer and all we do is look at pictures and we judge things and we do things and we listen to people that don't even go anywhere, that don't even leave their chairs, aren't out there and active in our community. Those aren't the people that are working for our breed. The people that are working for our breed are the people that are out there in the community. They're out there at the shows. They're out there showing people their dogs. You know, they're spreading the love of this breed. Those are the people that are really working for our community, not the people that are sitting on their computers all the time, you know?
Why don't you ever get negative and bash people? I mean,
yeah, because there's no time in life for that. Life moves so fast. Boom, boom, boom. You know what I mean? It's fast. Tomorrow's another thing. Tomorrow's another thing. The drama you have today is forgotten. Tomorrow it's on to another thing. I do not have the time in my life to focus on bashing people, being negative. The drama, it's too short. It moves too fast. I want to enjoy things. I'm not worried about bashing people. You know, people that live those kind of lives, that focus, and I'm not picking. I know right now there's things going on in the community between different people, whatever. I'm not even targeting any in particular person. I'm just saying people who spend their life doing that, they're not enjoying their life. They're not enjoying what they're doing. These are dogs, man. This is a fun thing. This is something to get out with your family, do with the community, represent the breed, do something positive, you know, something that united the world. It's something fun to do. If you're just going to sit around and be a negative person all the time, what does that do for you? It does nothing for you. It does nothing for the breed. It does nothing for morale. It does nothing for energy. It's nothing. And it's gone tomorrow. So why? Why waste your time on negativity? Why bash people? You know, I don't have the time to bash people. If I don't like you, I just don't deal with you, period, you know?
And I want to give something that I want to say. You know, normally when I do these radio shows, I give a closing thing. And one of the things I want people to understand is in my time here, I've been called a lot of different things. I've done a lot of different things. I've disagreed with Dave. I've agreed with Dave. I've disagreed with the ABKC. I went out, unlike a lot of people, I went to other registries. I went to other shows. I've looked at other dogs. I've switched breeds until I found what was right for me. But one of the things I don't spend a lot of time on is the people that left. And I've made posts about it. I've written beautiful, beautiful essays about it. But I've never focused on the people that left. I always focus on the people that are here fighting to make change. And one of the things I want to say is, this week I was noticing a post about a junior handler, and that junior handler is Destiny. Destiny, forgive me for saying your name on the air. People said that she needs to stop showing because she's won and she's dominated. This is a young lady that I've watched grow and become better every year, not only in the ring, but better in school, better as a person. She's a better daughter. She's a wonderful, wonderful individual. And she said, I'm going to continue to show until I'm 18. What I like to focus on in my time in the bully community, not just the ABKC, but in the bully community, are these children that I see grow up and go from being 10-year-olds to now 18, 19-year-olds out there showing. Stephanie Witherspoon's another one. She was the number one junior handler a couple of years back, and now she has a junior handler of her own that was just born this past fall. And those are the stories that I think we need to focus on in the bully community, because now in my time here, we have families that have come up in this community. They've shown only American Bullies. The only breed of dog some of these kids have ever owned is the American Bully, and that's a beautiful thing. I'm open to debate anybody that wants me to come onto their show, anybody that wants to argue with me and say I'm wrong, I'm open. I have no problem talking, you know. I have a long extended vernacular and vocabulary, so we can definitely take time to do that.
Those type of stories, Willie, those are the real deal. That's why I do this. Those are things that need to be spread. Those are the good feeling things, you know, and that's what this is all about.
Yeah.
You can debate people. Yeah. I'm not debating nobody. I'm not wasting my time on any of that kind of stuff. I know I'm worried about progression, period. That's all
there
I want to do
go.
Is progress, period. And if you want to, it's fine. No problem. You know, there are going to be mistakes. There's going to be things you don't agree with. Not everything is going to be perfect. If anything is ever truly believed in you hear on the internet, and a company can't just act on rumors. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of things in this world, and some things, you know, are just rumors, and that's just what they are. But this is a company. If something's really wrong, we're going to take action. If it's a real situation that is true, we're going to take action, okay? Other than that, I'm not wasting time on drama and rumors and all these things, because I'm worried about progression. We've been progressing all these years. We're still progressing. We're going to get better. I've been focusing my time this time on education and training. Maybe you don't like something today. Well, don't worry. We're getting better at it. That's what we're doing. That's the whole purpose of what we're doing. The generation, the next generation, or the same generation we have is going to be improved next year. The next generation is going to be even better. You know, that's what we're working on. That's what we're focused on. And if you take a step back, you'll see it. So that's what it is. So. But anyway,
yeah, and
I just
I hope people separate the community from the company and understand there is an entertainment factor to the American Bully, and that's what has kept it moving. Dave, I got to always say, man, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you reaching out saying you wanted to do a radio show and give an address. I personally think I could be biased, but this is probably one of the better interviews that we've done, although we've had some great ones in the past. This one I feel really good about. I hope I answered everybody's questions. It's a very quick 90 minutes. It's a very fast 90 minutes.
And if not, my email's open. If you got a question, a complaint, something, just email me. RazorsEdgeInc@gmail.com. It's been the same for I don't even know how many years, but, you know. I'm always open to that. I'm not into the negative stuff. I'm into finding solutions and moving forward and making things better, and that's it.
All right. I'm just checking. I'm glad you got rid of your old email, bunnyballs19@hotmail.com.
Hey, that was me. Nobody else had that one.
All right, man. I'm going to let you get to your family, man, once again. I appreciate you coming on and your opinion, and best of wishes.
You have a good night. And everybody that's out there doing something right, you know, much respect. Thank you all for all the years of support. You take care.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right, that was Dave Wilson. Once again, Razor's Edge, ABKC. We appreciate him coming on. This is my first night back on radio, and I have to say this. It was a good night. I'm not going to say it was a great night, but it was a good night for me. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to me speak and ask questions. I'm sure, 100% positive, y'all are pissed off that I didn't ask some questions. And that's cool because I'm used to that. That's just the way radio works. I'd like to shout out to everybody that supported me and said hello and hey, it's been a long time. It's a lot of love out there. We appreciate that. I appreciate it personally. Don't forget this weekend, I will be in Perry, Georgia for the ABKC Super Bully Bowl show with my man Rolando Mata. This is his show. I will be on the microphone. I appreciate that opportunity to come out there. Once again, like I said, I don't know how often I'm going to do radio because my producer, Lauren, she's doing it for free tonight. But she told me she has a budget and she has a salary request. And she doesn't do this anymore. So I appreciate it. Shout out to Jamie Street, my original producer who used to do my radio show with me. Maybe I'll have to come and get you one night. Am I doing a raffle on the radio show? You already know I don't raffle anything. Oh, at Rolando's show, is he doing a raffle, a $50 show? I'm not sure. You know, I don't know if he's doing $50 a night. He may be. Oh, at registration? Yeah, these questions. I have no idea what Rolando's doing. He may be doing a raffle. I don't want to say he's not. So let's just throw it out there that he's doing a raffle.
He's not okay. Doing one. I am.
Wait, who is doing a raffle?
Your producer is doing a raffle at his show.
Lauren, you're doing a raffle?
I am.
What the hell are you raffling off?
Oh, it's nothing special, but I'm just doing one. No, everybody likes money.
who comes on and says I'm doing a raffle? It's nothing special. Like, listen, all right,
look,
how much is the raffle? How much money do I need to put in? How much?
Oh, you don't have to put nothing in. All I'm saying is a registration for all entries. You're entered to win a $50 Visa gift card.
A $50 yeah. Visa gift card. Bet.
Everybody that registered is entered to win.
Okay, I'll be registered, I suppose. I didn't even know it was going down. But that is going down this weekend. We'll be in Perry, Georgia. I'm super excited about it. I believe this is the third or the fourth one. This is one of the few shows me and Rolando don't do together. So I don't even think I have anything to show, but I will be on the microphone. I will be trying to entertain you guys the best way I can. I got a shout-out to the people in Chicago who just hired me to MC in March. I appreciate that. Shout-out to Euro Nationals on February 25th in Italy. I'm hoping to be out there. You know, I'm trying. I'm pushing the schedule all together. Shout out to my Shorty Bull family. Shout out to my boy Bobby, who has the number one Shorty Bull in the country right now with AKA Mr. Savage. I hate to say it, but I got to say it. He's a GOAT grandson. You know, I'm milking that as long as I can. So I'm going to put that out there. Shout out to my oldie people that listened. I know my man Julio tuned in tonight. I know Megan tuned in as well. So shout out to y'all with the oldie questions. Shout out to my boy Wilfredo, who had a lot of the questions about things that he's concerned about. And one of the things I didn't get to talk about was people not show. I hope Dave gave a little clarity to that. If not, you know, I'll be back. Shout out to him. Shout out to Ruckus 30. Shout out to my boy Quentin for his questions. Everybody that sent me questions, man, a lot of y'all had some of the same stuff. So I'm trying to do that. I appreciate those that are saying it's a good show. Shout out to Spielberg for sharing it. Shout out to my boy Ariel out there who supports me on the radio and let me know what was going on. So shout out to him. Shout out to Rye. Let him see us do his thing. It's going to be a great year in the Bully community. And all I can say from Bully the Kid to everybody else out there is get out and do what you want to do with your dog and be positive and have fun. It's not just about positive. There are things that we talk about that will create change. And one of my close friends told me that today. He said, understand that a lot of times controversy is what constitutes change. So I agree with that. I don't think us being positive all the time makes a lot of things happen. Shout out to my friend Jamie Sweet out there for making everything happen as well. Big things going on with Shorty Bulls. Y'all thought y'all was ready? I promise you, you are not ready for what we're doing next. So you need to get at me if you want to know what's going on with Shorty Bulls. And, you know, we got a big surprise coming real soon. I'm just trying to kill time until I can play my intro and get out of here. Lord, can you play that Bully the Kid joint one more time for me? Because that's the only music we got, so we might as well play.
Yeah, it's your boy DJ Dramatic from the Senate DJs. You checking out my man right now, Bully the Kid.
Pause.
It's going down real heavy in the...
The champ is here.
Time's up.
The champ is here.
Remix.
Turn your radio up.
Bully the Kid. No.
Bully the Kid.
talk is up, so grab the keys, the time is low.